Chapter 3. Elsewhere. Zarko smelled the burning. It surrounded him, emanating from a sea of fire. A spur of dark rock, like an unfurled tongue, stretched out from the safety of the bank over endless magma. Zarko was standing upon its precipice, looking down into grey pools of pyroclastic smoke. Above, there was no sky. No earth, only darkness reigned, eternal, amorphous, and unnatural. No armor, no protection of any kind covered Zarko's body, yet the flames spitting up at him did not burn. Not even when they touched his naked skin and sizzled against flesh before dissipating into formless smoke did they cause him harm. This raiment of fire had become his mantle. He embraced it, and the sheer destructive power of the mountain. Her name was Deathfire. The ancient tribes had called it so, and thus it ever was and would be. Surrounded by its heart blood, Zarko stood at Deathfire's subterranean epicenter and exulted. He closed his eyes. With the shimmering heat haze and the smoke, he was almost blind anyway. The fire became a sudden omnipresence, a sentient and blazing ocean. In many ways, more than Zarko realized in that moment, it was. Senses now fully engaged, he drank in the heady atmosphere and used it to marshal his thoughts. Waves churned and roared. Ash and earth were redolent on the hot breeze and borne aloft on eddies of steam. Zarko wished to rise with them, but knew his destination was below, deep within the merciless currents. With the rock sharp and gritty underfoot, his bare skin prickling at its touch, Zarko committed his mind and soul and leapt from the spur. For a fleeting moment, he felt peace. Suspended in midair, as if held in aspic, a strange transcendence overcame Zarko. Then the fire sea opened its maw wide and swallowed him. There was no pain, only reluctance, as if admittance into these lower depths was uncertain. But after overcoming this brief inertia, Zarko began to descend. In spite of the preparations he had made, the experience was disconcerting at first. Eventually, he allowed the currents to take him. As he sank into endless flame, he recalled the myths of old Nocturne, like Ilios dragged down to the hell maelstrom by his anvil, or Kardra, who failed to outswim the drake Bargal on the Acerbian Sea, or Gelia, who sank to his doom in the Gaisar Ocean, wrestling the serpents of Okesh. Zarko was no mythic hero of Nocturne, though he relished recalling their deeds. Yet here he was on the fire sea, cut adrift, just like in those sagas of old. The memories armored him, more potent than any suit of ceramite and adamantium ever could in this place. With a final push, he reached the bottom of the ocean and almost simultaneously breached the surface, emerging into a twilight world. Hard iron chains wrapped around his ankles, the weight of their small anvils dragging at him, but also anchoring him. The stronger his mental state, the more inviolate the chains became, the tougher each link would be. By anchoring his body in this place, they were also anchoring his mind. Seeing and feeling the mental tethers, however illusory it all was, made it easier to believe they were actually there. In this place, belief was reality. Without the anvils, well, he did not want to consider what kind of fate that could lead to. Alone, he beheld a night-black ocean, one that reached to the edge of sight and beyond. A storm was rising, driving the sea into turbulent waves with their crests ablaze. Firelight dappled the water like frenzied flecks of pigment. Images resolved, painted on this dark canvas by an unseen hand. To Zarko, they resembled faces. Some, he knew, were old, others yet to be. Boundless, formless chronology unfolded before him. He had but to swim in it, to learn its secrets. The storm was perturbing, though. He had not expected it. Turmoil was common in this other realm, but not like this. Something was wrong. Something external was trying to exert its influence. Zarko swam, braving whatever tumult had seized the ocean. Fear was an enemy he could ill afford. His training and conditioning had rendered the concept alien. Here, both would be tested. Despite the tempestuous waters, he knew these straits and their perils. Predators did not take long to come. Drawn by Zarko's soul flame, they appeared as shadows at first, a darker sliver on an already black background. Three shapes resolved soon after, spear tips of coal knifing through an ocean, limned in red. A great swell of water was rising. Zarko went perpendicular to the tide, swimming hard against the edge of a growing wave. The anvils, rather than hold him down, began to slip. Only force of will kept them manacled. Driving furiously, arm over arm, legs beating hard, he risked a glance over his shoulder and smiled. The coal-black hunters were following. He swam on, all the while the currents shifting below him, the tide ever pulling. As he raced, he heard voices, half snatched before the roar of the flaming sea carried them hence. In the fiery wreathed depths, he half glimpsed faces that were about to resolve before they too were dashed by the ocean's fury. The wave was rising, curling, and in a moment it would break. Zarko rose with it, his body screaming. The hunters gave chase, darting after him like flung spears. Zarko reached the wave crest just as it crashed. He crested the peak with a last surge of strength, and the hunters, fractionally behind him, were smashed apart. Gasping, Zarko rolled gently down the back of the wave. The tumult ended, and the sea was calm again. Taking a few moments to gather up his depleted strength, Zarko heard the voices return. One rose to prominence amongst the clamour. Whomever it had, did, or would belong to, cried out in anguish. The tides began to rise again, this time a reflection of the mental turmoil expressed through the twilight ocean, rather than the incursion of never-born entities. Zarko turned, trying to discern a pattern to the images painted in fire upon the water. He thought he saw a face locked in a silent scream before it grew too wide and ate itself in a fount of spume. An echo faded with the image, two words, difficult to grasp. Ferro Ignis. Yes, that was it. Fire sword. Zarko had no idea as to its meaning. He wanted to delve deeper, find truth within the tides, but another voice wrenched him back. Unlike the cry he had heard across the ocean, Zarko recognized this one and allowed his mental tethers to unravel. One by one, the chain links around his ankles unpicked themselves and fell into the sea, where they dissolved like ash. Slowly, deliberately, Zarko detached mind and body from this realm and awoke in another, aboard a spaceship. Transition from the other realm to the one of matter and substance was not immediate. Zarko first became aware of the chamber around him. His psychically heightened senses slowly faded in a diminishing pulse, like an echo reaching its aural terminus. He felt the ship, the souls aboard, his librarian's eye seeing everything in a burst of psychic sonar. Engines were at full stop. Anchor was laid, and the low thrum of life support systems barely intruded on the quietude. Serfs roamed the corridors, performing such circadian rhythms as was required of them, but it was almost ghost-like on the forge hammer. The ship was slumbering. Ever since the Seekers had departed, a state of dormancy had descended upon those left behind, as if their existence was held fast in amber until the others returned to report their findings. In his darkened chamber, Zarko drank in the silence and absorbed the shadows. His crouched form exuded steam. Wisps of white vapor rose up into the air filtration systems of the frigate. On his perch nearby, a Drignir with blue scales and a yellow crest cawed and snapped.
"I see it. No need to shout, Krylish," Zarko murmured, still coming around from his journey across the fire tides.
A vox hail lit up the console in front of him.
"Speak," said Zarko. "It's me," a stern voice answered. "We've found the ship."
The feed was a little broken, unclear. Atmospheric interference had been fouling communications.
Either that, or Agathon was leading his men further down into the hive. "Anything else?" asked Zarko. "Just ash, brother."
Agathon left a short pause before saying,
"Your voice is slurred, Codicio. I thought Velkona advised you to limit your time trawling the fire tides."
"I'm just tired, brother captain," Zarko lied. "No need for concern."
Another pause as Agathon considered his response.
"Have you heard anything from the others?" he asked.
Zarko used the console to activate a screen. Weak light bled from it, illuminating his features. They were sharp, angular, not uncommon in Nocturnian psychers. His eyes glowed a deep crimson, but there was the faintest trace of cerulean blue there also, as his recent exertion of power had yet to fade completely. Three sigils were lit up on the screen, one of which was active. Below each sigil, lines of biorhythmic data identified each individual member of all three hunt teams. A chronos stamp indicated their last recorded communication. Two had been silent for several hours.
"Nothing. They made planetfall, but all quiet since then. Yours is the first voice I've heard in a while, brother captain."
Agathon paused to give orders to the other warriors in his hunt squad before resuming his conversation with Zarko.
"Locke went west into the tunnel complex, Clovius north to the silos. Down here, taking any direction is like entering a labyrinth."
"Our father faced a similar trial, or so legend says."
"Not like this. It's like trawling in a sea of effluence. Whatever prompted him to seek refuge here, I cannot say. Sark nests have more charm."
"Will you keep looking? What if he's already gone, or dead?"
"If he's dead, there'll be a mess, and we can track it. Warriors like him don't die easily. I think we're close. Zartath claims he has his scent."
"You trust him? The mutant, I mean."
"You realize he can hear you, Codicia?"
"He knows my feelings. I have voiced them often enough to his face."
"Consider yourself fortunate he has yet to cut yours open."
"I shall bear that in mind, brother captain,"
said Zarko, smiling at an empathetic snarl from Krylish.
"And so, your quarry, will you keep looking?"
"I must."
"Then I shall continue to monitor you from the forge hammer."
"All quiet up there?"
asked Agathon as the conversation began to wind down.
"Peacefully so."
"And the tides, Zarko, what did you learn from them?"
Now it was Zarko's turn to pause as he considered the question.
"Unsure, but they are fickle. There was some turmoil."
"I am not a psyker, Zarko,"
Agathon chafed.
"What exactly does that mean?"
"That something is going to happen. Something important. Soon, I think."
Agathon took a few seconds to respond.
"Stay out of the tides, Zarko," he said eventually. "Some mysteries are best left alone."
"As you wish."
Zarko bowed to the shadows and cut the voxlink. Silence was restored, and darkness reasserted. He closed his eyes to cast his consciousness out amongst an ocean of thought and began to roam. Serfs went about their duties. The decks were quiet, with bulkheads sealed, and all systems were running normally. For now, they remained undetected. But Zarko's psychic awareness stopped at Forgehammer's armored hull. It failed to reach into space, for if it had, he would have known that all was far from normal. He would have perceived the small ship gliding slowly towards their anchorage in the upper atmosphere, and he would have felt the homicidal intent emanating from the few determined souls aboard.
Lieutenant Mercato, Zarko spoke down the vox feed to his chief armsman.
My lord,
came a firm reply a few seconds later.
I am entering my sanctum and not to be disturbed.
Understood, my lord.
Zarko severed the link, closed his eyes, and re-entered the fire tides.